Hello, welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, August 9th. I'm your reader, Dagna. Today's mini editorial is written by the Journal Editorial Board, and they write, "Congratulations to all the exhibitors at area county fairs this summer, and good luck to those who advance to compete in the Iowa State Fair, which runs Thursday through August 21st in Des Moines." Our first story is about the school board, and the headline is "School Board Seeking Applicants to Fill Elbert's Term." The Sioux City School Board will be accepting applications to fill the term of board member Julene Elbert. Elbert resigned from her seat last week, effective immediately due to family reasons. Employed as the Vice President of Learning at Western Iowa Tech Community College, Elbert was elected to the school board in 2019. Her term was to end in November 2023. According to Board President Dan Greenwell, the district has 30 days to fill Elbert's vacancy, and people will have until August 19th to submit applications with the school district. "We are looking for applicants who may experience in education or financial matters," Greenwell said moments after the school board's Monday night meeting. "Applicants will be invited to speak and answer questions from the school board at its August 22nd meeting. The board will have until September 2nd to seek a person to fill the remainder of Elbert's term. If the board cannot make up its mind on a successor for Elbert, a special election will need to be held. Those seeking the seat in a special election will have to supply nomination papers with more than 1,800 signatures. According to Woodbury County Auditor Pat Gill, it would cost the school district around $20,000 to $25,000 for the special election." Greenwell said a special election cannot take place 4 weeks prior to or 4 weeks after the November 8th general election. "That means we'd be looking at mid to late December as the earliest date for a special election," he said. "So a board appointment would be our preferred action." And then in city council news, council awards $2.3 million contract for Pierce Street water main replacement. The Sioux City Council awarded a $2.3 million contract to an engineering company Monday for the construction of the Pierce Street water main replacement. The council's vote was 4-0 in favor of giving the project to Sioux City Engineering Company. Councilwoman Julie Shaner was absent from the meeting. Sioux City Engineering Company submitted the loan bid for the project, $2,360,187.10. That bid was nearly 37% above the engineer's estimate of $1,725,000. The project includes the replacement of the existing water main on Pierce Street from 5th Street to 7th Street, abandonment of combined sewers, and replacement of street paving for utility repairs. "We are not saving anything here," Mayor Bob Scott remarked before the vote. "We're not if they meet the incentive, no," Public Works Director Dave Carney responded. "We tried to do something different. We thought we'd get more bidders. We were disappointed." There is a $100,000 incentive to complete work in stage one of the contract prior to November 23rd and another $100,000 incentive for project completion before July 3rd, 2023. The project has a late start date of May 15th, 2023. It is being funded with American Rescue Plan Act dollars. "That's why the contract price is what it is. If they don't get those incentives already in that contract price, it'll be taken out if they don't meet the incentive, so we don't have to allocate the funds later," Carney explained. Mayor Pro Tem Dan Moore asked Carney if Sioux City Engineering Company can continue working on the project through the winter months depending on the weather. "Most likely, I think they'd take a winter shutdown and then start in the spring. They're probably not going to want to do it in the wintertime," said Carney, who noted that contractors will be taking up one lane of traffic. On June 27th, the council voted 4-1 to adopt plans, specifications, form of contract, and estimated cost for the project. Scott cast the lone no vote, noting that the city could have bidded a lot earlier. A 110-plus-year-old cast-iron water main broke near the intersection of 5th and Pierce Streets on June 23rd. The water main has suffered at least 3 breaks in the past year or so, with 2 of those being directly in front of the Orpheum Theater. After the latest break, the Orpheum and the Elf's downtown library lost running water, and the fire suppression systems of the theater and the Francis Building were down. A stretch of Pier Street was reduced to one lane. The front page also has a couple of pictures from a tour done at the Railroad Museum, and the caption for the first picture is, "The Sioux City Railroad Museum's Larry Obermeyer talks about the history of the museum with Iowa Transportation Commissioners Kathy Furman, Ray Geisner, and Linda Juckett during a tour of the museum on Monday. The museum was one of several places visited by commissioners as part of the Iowa Department of Transportation Commissioners meeting Tuesday at the Sioux City Convention Center." Then the caption for the second picture is, "Iowa Transportation Commissioners Ray Geisner and Richard Arnold look at the controls inside the Sioux City Railroad Museum's Great Northern 1355 steam locomotive during a tour of the museum on Monday. A Sioux City School Board member takes job at Bishop Heelan. Sioux City School Board member Bob Mickelson has been named Dean of Students at Bishop Heelan Catholic High School. Mickelson, a retired teacher and softball coach who taught at Sioux City West Middle School for 30 years, was elected to his first term on the school board last fall. "I'm looking forward to working with Heelan students," Mickelson said in a Heelan news release. As a public school board member, Mickelson will abstain from voting on issues related to Heelan, according to the news release from the private school. A native of Kingsley, Iowa, Mickelson has a bachelor's degree from Buena Vista University and a master's degree in school administration from Wayne State University. Mickelson, who played baseball on Buena Vista, later starred on several elite fast-pitch softball teams in Sioux City. In 2015, he was inducted into the Iowa Amateur Softball Association Fast-Pitch Hall of Fame. His wife, Kate Mickelson, is a former Heelan teacher and a yearbook advisor and mother of Heelan senior Trinity Walker and incoming senior Solomon Walker, according to the Heelan release. Mickelson also has an adult daughter, Taylor. Nebraska will not hold special legislative session on abortion. Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts announced Monday that he will not call a special legislative session to try to enact a 12-week abortion ban because the measure doesn't have enough votes to break a filibuster. Ricketts, a Republican who has said he wants to ban all abortions, even in cases of rape and incest, said in a statement that Speaker of the Legislature Mike Hilgers informed him that only 30 lawmakers would vote for a measure to ban the procedure starting at 12 weeks of pregnancy. 33 votes are needed to break a filibuster. It is deeply saddening that only 30 Nebraska state senators are willing to come back to Lincoln this fall in order to protect innocent life, Ricketts said in his statement. Hilgers, a Republican abortion opponent, had said in June that he anticipated a special session later this summer. During the legislature's regular session, opponents successfully filibustered a proposed trigger law that would have seen Nebraska outlaw abortion once the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the landmark 1973 Roe v. Wade decision that legalized the procedure nationwide. The vote to end debate in the officially nonpartisan one-chamber legislature was 31-15, two votes shy of what was needed. Ricketts' announcement comes after voters in neighboring Kansas last week resoundingly rejected a ballot measure that would have allowed the state's conservative legislature to ban abortion. Indiana on Friday became the first state to approve such restrictions since the Supreme Court's June ruling that removed constitutional protections for the procedure. Abortion rights proponent Senator Megan Hunt of Omaha had warned in May that she would make a special session on abortion an excruciating, painful experience for her fellow lawmakers. She said politicians across the country are seeing the effects of the Supreme Court's June decision. "We are seeing what's happening to patients in Texas, to assault survivors in Ohio. We're seeing what happened on the ballot in Kansas, and Nebraska anti-abortion politicians are afraid of the issue," Hunt said. "They know the majority of Nebraskans support the right to abortion, and they know that if they brought us into special session, they simply would not win." Sioux City man gets 10 years for selling meth. A Sioux City man was sentenced Friday to 10 years in federal prison for selling meth. Carmela Valdez Romero, 35, was convicted by a jury in U.S. District Court in Sioux City in February of possession with intent to distribute meth. Trial evidence showed that on March 17, 2020, Valdez Romero and others possessed about 20 pounds of meth hidden in 1-pound packages in the gas tank of a rental vehicle that had been driven from California to a shed in rural Dickinson County for distribution in northwest Iowa. While executing a search warrant at the shed, authorities seized 15 pounds of meth from a safe and 5 pounds being driven away from the property, including 1 pound in a vehicle driven by Valdez Romero. Agents also seized $1,600 in cash used by agents earlier in the day to buy a pound of meth. Storm Lake man killed in crash near Primgar. A Storm Lake, Iowa man died Saturday in a two-vehicle collision at a rural intersection east of Primgar. At approximately 2 p.m., Lori Banks, 56, of Sutherland, Iowa, was northbound on O'Brien County Road L-54 in a Chevrolet Silverado pickup and did not stop at the stop sign at the intersection with O'Brien County Road B-40. Banks struck the driver's side of a westbound Ford Escape driven by Mark Kirkholm, 66, of Storm Lake in the intersection. Kirkholm's vehicle entered the ditch and rolled at least once. Kirkholm, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was partially ejected and pronounced dead at the scene. Banks, who was wearing a seatbelt, was transported to Mercy One Primgar Medical Center for treatment of her injuries. And we'll have a quick look at the 5-day forecast. Today is sunny to partly cloudy with the high of 88, and tonight has a predicted low of 64. Wednesday will be mostly sunny and hot with the high of 94 and a low of 65. Thursday is some clouds and some sun with a high of 90 and a low of 65. Friday will be breezy and warm with clouds and sun with a high of 91 and a low of 70. And Saturday will be partly sunny and very warm with a high of 92 and a low of 66. Iowa Attorney General asks Biden to waive fertilizer tariffs. Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller on Monday joined farm groups in calling on President Joe Biden's administration to waive fertilizer tariffs. Miller issued a statement joining the American Farm Bureau Federation, the American Soybean Association, and the National Corn Growers Association. The three ag groups issued a letter late last month calling on Biden to remove or reduce tariffs on imports of phosphate fertilizers from Morocco. The U.S. International Trade Commission imposed a 20% tax on phosphate fertilizer from Morocco in 2021 after a request from American producer Mosaic Company, which said it was harmed by government subsidies on Moroccan exports. Prices of fertilizer have risen sharply due to inflation, supply chain disruptions, shifting demand, and global conflict, creating financial concerns for farmers. The Russia-Ukraine war has pushed up the price of natural gas, a key ingredient in fertilizer, and has led to sanctions against Russia, a major exporter of fertilizer. Miller pointed to a June study from Iowa State University he commissioned into the causes of high fertilizer prices to determine whether price gouging was occurring in the market. While crop prices have roughly doubled over the past couple of years, fertilizer prices are 2 to 4 times higher than they were in September of 2020, according to the ISU study. It is critical that the president act as soon as possible, as growers begin purchasing fertilizer in preparation for the 2023 growing season, Miller said in a statement. These farmers have already suffered enough. Miller said that he's grateful the U.S. International Trade Commission decided not to increase duties on urea ammonium nitrate, another critical fertilizer for farmers, and called on the commission to reverse its decision to allow the tariffs on phosphate fertilizer products. In the meantime, Miller said Biden should use his authority to waive import duties on fertilizer products. Miller said he remains concerned that manufacturers are taking advantage of higher crop prices to increase their returns. More evidence is emerging that these tariffs are unnecessary to protect domestic manufacturers of fertilizer, he said. Bail set at $5 million for Nebraska quadruple killing suspect. A judge has set bail at $5 million for a man suspected of killing 4 people and trying to burn down their homes in the small northeast Nebraska town of Laurel last week. Court records show Cedar County Judge Douglas Luby set bond at 10% of $5 million for 42-year-old Jason Jones, meaning he would have to put up $500,000 to be released from jail while he awaits trial. The defendant is considered an extreme danger to public safety, the judge wrote in his bond order. Neither Nebraska State Patrol Colonel John Bolduc nor a spokeswoman for Chi Health St. Elizabeth in Lincoln, where Jones is being treated for serious burns, would give Jones' current medical condition on Monday. Jones is charged with 10 felonies, including 4 counts of first-degree murder, 2 counts of arson, and 4 weapon counts. Investigators have said Jones shot and killed his neighbor across the street, 53-year-old Michelle Ebeling, early Thursday morning before setting her house on fire, then went 3 blocks south, broke into another home, and fatally shot 3 people there, 86-year-old Jean Twyford, his wife 85-year-old Janet Twyford, and their 55-year-old daughter Dana Twyford. Jones also set fire to the Twyford home, police said. During the investigation into the killings, the Nebraska State Patrol said they found a backpack and receipts belonging to Jones showing the purchase of a gas can and other items. A pistol registered to Jones was also found at the Twyford's home, the patrol said. Authorities have not commented on a possible motive for the killings, but charging documents allege Jones killed the Twyfords while trying to carry out a burglary. Laurel is a small city of about 1,000 that lies about 100 miles northwest of Omaha. Iowa manufacturer settles federal government complaint. A Southwest Iowa company that makes metal castings used by military contractors in helicopters and other equipment has reached a settlement in a lawsuit alleging the company failed to test the castings and falsely certified test results over 7 years. Wellman Dynamics, a Creston company that manufactures large metal castings used by military contractors, including Bell Helicopter, Sikorsky Aircraft, and Boeing Company, will pay $500,000 in restitution to the U.S. government to settle the allegations, court documents indicate. The lawsuit was filed in federal court against Wellman after employee Bradley Keller filed a complaint under the whistleblower provisions of the False Claims Act. Keller had worked in the areas of the factory responsible conducting various tests on the metal to ensure it met quality standards. He said after he reported the improper testing and falsification of records between 2014 and 2021, he was laid off, but documents indicated he was later rehired. Keller will receive $90,000 out of the settlement amount under the whistleblower provisions of the False Claim Act. The company also must pay him $15,000 to settle a retaliation claim and his attorneys more than $63,000. A U.S. Department of Justice official said in a statement that proper testing is critical for ensuring the proper performance of the equipment that is provided to the military. We will hold accountable those who knowingly falsify or fail to conduct required testing and put our military at risk, the Principal Deputy Assistant Attorney General Brian Boynton, head of the department's civil division. In the settlement agreement, the company denies the allegations, but indicated the case was settled to avoid the delay, uncertainty, inconvenience, and expense of protracted litigation of the claims. The company and its attorney did not immediately reply to a message. The agreement does not prevent the government from investigating further and pursuing criminal charges against some individuals if warranted. The company must cooperate with any such investigation. Hardware Hank and Flooring in Lamar's claims top open for business grant from IEDA. A Lamar's hardware store was chosen from among 24 competitors statewide for the top prize in the annual Open for Business Pitch Contest organized by the Iowa Economic Development Authority and the Iowa Finance Authority. Hardware Hank and Flooring, a hardware and flooring store, won $20,000 in a pitch contest held in Pella, Iowa on August 1st. Last month, the store won $8,000 in an earlier regional round of the business pitch competition. Scott Pegler, who has owned Hardware Hank and Flooring for 12 years, pitched a high-tech mobile flooring showroom to demonstrate how the flooring would look inside a customer's home or business. Instead of coming down to the store, looking samples over, taking samples out to the car, taking them into your house, looking them over, back to the car, back to the store, I bring the flooring showroom to you, Pegler said. Pegler began bringing samples to the customers in recent years, but he doesn't yet have the equipment to bring them the mobile showroom experience he has in mind, thus the grant. The enclosed trailer was ordered Wednesday, Pegler said. Inside the trailer showroom will be samples of flooring, a big screen television, a mobile Wi-Fi hotspot, and a tablet computer. The technology allows the customer to see how their flooring choice would look. So what happens is we go inside, we take pictures of their home, of the flooring, and then we can go back out to the trailer and upload those pictures to manufacturers' websites where they have, it's like a flooring visualizing tool, and so we can plug different flooring options right on top of their existing floor, he said. The mobile showroom would be especially attractive for older residents, busy parents, and businesses considering a new floor. Elderly people hesitated taking any samples because they were cumbersome. Moms that are busy with kids running around the store, it's hard for them to stay focused, he said. So we started delivering samples to people's houses. But there was always a better way to do something. In addition to the trailer, Pegler said he's planning to expand the store's flooring displays. The IEDA grant is expected to cover about 75% of the cost of the mobile showroom, which Pegler said will be completely sourced from local firms. The other 25% will be paid for by Pegler. Initially, he had forecast 10% growth in demand for flooring jobs during the first year the mobile showroom is up and running, but the publicity generated by his winning the IEDA contest has already begun fueling demand well before the trailer is ready. We don't even have a trailer yet, and our foot traffic for flooring has increased. So I would say probably more along the lines of 15 to 20% than the first year we are now projecting, he said. The other finalists in the contest at Pella did not go home empty-handed. The first runner-up in the competition, Candle Ready Cakes in Dubuque, won $10,000. The second runner-up, the Bean Counter Coffee House and Drinkery in Burlington, won $7,500, and then two honorable mentions, the Hangry Lady in Cedar Rapids and the Corner Restaurant, won $5,000 each, according to the IEDA announcement. All of the participants actually ended up getting something, Pegler said. The big ideas pitched by these small business owners exemplify the entrepreneurial spirit and strength of small businesses and main streets across the state. Debbie Durham, the executive director of the Iowa Economic Development Authority and the Iowa Finance Authority, said in a statement. Morningside professor participates in first ever artist residency at LSU Vet School. Shelby Prindeville spent 2 months of the summer painting on mosquito OVI positioning paper, sculpting AstroTurf with a heat gun, and taking reference photographs of a brown thrasher nestling during the inaugural Artist-in-Residence program at the Louisiana State University School of Veterinary Medicine. Every single piece that I made has one, if not multiple things from the vet school, said Prindeville, an associate professor and head of the visual arts department at Morningside University. It spans chemicals, like stains and medicines, as well. Betadine has been surprisingly useful because it's basically iodine plus a little bit of extra other stuff. Iodine has long been used as a wood stain. Prindeville, who received her master's degree from LSU in painting and drawing, was contacted by a former professor about serving as a consultant as the School of Veterinary Medicine embarked on a venture that has never been done at a veterinary school in the United States before. She did not expect to be offered the first artist residency of its kind or think she would have the availability in the near future to do it. The school initially planned to run the residency for 6 months to 1 year in the fall, but when they proposed a 2-month residency to Prindeville during the summer, she jumped at the opportunity. My work is about the sort of fragility and resilience of the natural world. It's about ecology and the human nature balance seen through the lens of the fauna and flora, not through the lens of humanity, Prindeville said by phone from Baton Rouge. Just moments earlier, she was photographing a diagnostic scan of a magnificent frigate bird, a large black bird with a wingspan of over 7 feet. The opportunity to get really close, especially to the animals from the Wildlife Hospital, which are species that I would have had a very hard time, just as a general citizen, getting the type of close proximity access to, that was really appealing. Prendeville said artist residencies are exciting opportunities for her. She enjoys the pressure that comes along with having a deadline to complete artwork for an exhibition. For me, it's kind of combines a vacation with guilt-free productivity, said Prendeville, whose artist studio was in a study room in the bustling vet school. I really like all my bodies of work at residencies to connect to the site. I was excited to see what materials I might be able to incorporate from the vet school itself. The 7 paintings, 1 sculpture, and 17 ceramic pieces that Prendeville has completed thus far reflect a number of the school's areas, including pathology, histology, epidemiology, zoological medicine, and large animal medicine. I've met a number of amazing animals here. The top of the list for me is actually this baby brown thrasher that was here when I arrived. He was just a little nestling, she said. Because he was a little bit imprinted, he posed for me really well. He wasn't scared of me. He would sit in all of these interesting positions. I got to watch him grow up. Prendeville created 2 paintings of the brown thrasher, which was eventually released into the wild, painting him 3 times across those paintings. She also painted a Mississippi kite and a Nigerian dwarf goat named Morticia. Morticia was slated to deliver her kid via C-section, but she ended up spending roughly 6 weeks at the school before finally going into labor. I got to see her hours-old baby when finally it was delivered via C-section. He is the cutest thing, she said of baby Lurch. I haven't painted him yet, but I will. Prendeville found the process of photographing mosquitoes fascinating. In order for her to take reference images of the tiny insects for her paintings, they had to be briefly frozen. Not to kill them, but just to slow their blood down enough so that they are not going to fly, she explained. Then they gently tweezed them out onto a metal tray on a block of ice. Depending on far away you scooted the metal tray from the block of ice, they sort of sluggishly reanimate. If they reanimated too much, you'd scoot it back on the ice to chill them out a little bit more. Prendeville ended up painting a portrait of 2 female mosquitoes after they had a blood meal, along with 3 mosquito eggs on the OV positioning paper, which is the paper used to hatch mosquito eggs for research purposes. Prendeville's exhibition at LSU opened on July 25th. She said her work will also be on display at Lauritsen Gardens in Omaha in mid-August and in the Town and Country, Missouri in October. She's tentatively planning a show at Morningside University next fall. I'm still trying to create some more work. I don't know when I'll finish it, she said. I have a possum painting in progress right now, and I have a few other pieces in very early stages of design going on, too. I do hope the final body of work connected to this artist residency will be even bigger. We will now move to the sports section, and our first story is about the Explorers. The headline is, Sioux City Explorers Open Short Home Stand with Win Over Kansas City. Even though it's a short trip home, the Sioux City Explorers on Monday started it off with an 8-4 win over the Kansas City Monarchs at Lewis and Clark Park. It is the 4th straight win for the Explorers, who passed the Lincoln Salt Dogs in the West Division standings. The Explorers enter Tuesday's full slate of game and a half up on the Salt Dogs with the win. The Explorers set the tone right away, scoring twice in the first inning. Danry Vasquez scored Danny Amaral with an RBI single, then Sebastian Zawada got a sacrifice fly that scored Blake Tiberi. Chase Harris homered in the second inning. The Explorers scored twice more in the third inning. Zawada had an RBI single, while Gabe Snyder had an RBI single. Zawada had another RBI hit, a double, followed by a Snyder RBI single in the fifth inning. Sioux City tacked on one more run in the sixth. Blaine Hardy earned the win. He went 5 innings, allowing 4 runs on 9 hits. He struck out 5 and walked 2. Max Coons pitched a 3-inning stint, and he struck out 8. Thomas McElrath struck out the side in the 9th inning. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, August 9th, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. There are no obituaries in today's paper. So we will continue with sports. Now, next one is about prep baseball. The headline is, who made the Iowa High School Baseball Coaches Association All-State List? The Iowa High School Baseball Coaches Association over the weekend voted on its All-State team, and one Bishop Heelan High School hitter was voted onto the All-Class Super Team. Crusader senior slugger Ian Gill was the only Siouxland hitter who made the Super Team, a team of the best players in the state. Gill led Heelan with 20 doubles, 51 RBIs, 11 home runs, and 51 hits. He was among the top of the home run chase hitters early in the season. Gill also hit .455 while he slugged .946. Gill also stole 13 bases on the season. Here's a look at the other All-Staters voted by the coaches in no particular order. Class 4A, Aiden Haukup, East Senior. Haukup had a team-high 7 wins and allowed 27 earned runs in 47 and two-thirds innings. Skylar Hansen, West Senior. Hansen hit .480 and drove in 31 RBIs. He also hit 2 home runs. Cole Johnson, East Senior. Johnson hit .383 with 15 RBIs. He had 7 doubles on the season. He also forced 23 walks, third best among East hitters. Brady Larson, West Senior. Larson drove in the second most runs among Wolverines hitters with 26 RBIs. He hit .402 and he had 14 extra base hits. He also scored 22 runs. For Class 3A, Bryce Click, Sergeant Bluff Luton Senior. Click knocked in 38 runs and had 21 extra base hits. He hit .379. When he got on base, he wasn't afraid to steal. He was 26 for 27 in stolen base attempts. Aiden Sepirda, SBL Senior. Sepirda led the Warriors with 45 RBIs and he hit .379. He got on base 47% of the time. On the mound, Sepirda was 7-1 with a 2.24 ERA. He had 63 strikeouts and 26 hits. Caleb Gengler, Heelan Senior. Gengler knocked in 26 runs and had a .290 batting average. He also pitched in 12 games and had a 4-3 record. He had a 1.61 ERA. Brady Baker, Heelan sophomore. Baker was third in RBIs among Heelan hitters with 34. He also had 21 extra base hits, including 19 doubles. Nikolai Whitey, MOC Floyd Valley Jr. He led all qualified Dutch hitters with a .390 average, and he also knocked in 23 runs. He also forced 35 walks, getting an OBI of .587. Reed Tigg, Spencer Jr. He led the Tigers with a .489 average with 34 RBIs. He only struck out 9 times. Class 2A, Dawson Rapirda, West Lyon Sr. He hit .471 and drove in 22 runs for the Wildcats. He had an OBP of .606. Aiden Comstock, Cherokee Jr. The Braves Jr. was second in RBIs with 26. He had 37 hits, which also tied with Benson Good for second. Trey Benson, Cherokee Sr. Benson led the Braves with 38 RBIs and 5 homers. He also was tied for third in doubles with 7. Benson was 3-0 pitching in 9 appearances. Jack Wajda, Spirit Lake Jr. He was second among Indian hitters with a .452 average and 11 RBIs. He also pitched in 1 game. Reese Vanderzee, Central Lyon sophomore. Vanderzee made it on base with a .500 clip while he drove in 20 runs on the season. He hit .415, which led the Lions. And then Class 1A, Carter Shorg, Remsen St. Mary Sr. Shorg had a .486 average while driving in 40 runs. He also had 21 extra base hits, including 3 triples in the state tournament. Cale Ortman, RSM Jr. Ortman knocked in second most runs for the Class 1A runner-up with 44. He also hit .519 and had 13 doubles. He was also 5-0 with a .71 ERA. Jackson Bunkers, RSM Jr. Bunkers went 9-0 on the mound with a .62 ERA. He struck out 55 and walked 19. At the plate, Bunkers struck out just thrice, and all 3 of those times came during the postseason. He hit .472 with a team-high 45 RBIs. Connor Kraft, Galen Catholic Jr. Kraft hit .317 with 20 RBIs, and he hit 9 extra base hits. He also went 5-0 on the mound and had a 38 RAA. ERA. Alex Schroeder, RSM Jr. Schroeder turned in a 377 average and knocked in 30 runs. He had 7 doubles and 1 triple. Will DeSteiger, Woodbury Central Jr. DeSteiger tied with Drew Kluder with 34 RBIs for the team lead, and the junior had 478. He had 12 extra base hits. Trey Jungers, Newell Fonda Sr. He hit 425 with 29 runs scored. He was 4-3 with a 175 ERA. Isaiah Garrett, RSM Jr., went 8-0 with a 90 ERA. On offense, he hit 319 with 15 RBIs. Keaton Logan, Galen Jr. Logan hit 359 with 21 RBIs. He had 11 doubles and a triple. Evan Newman, Kingsley Pearson Jr. Newman hit 500 with 52 RBIs. 46 of his 56 hits were singles. He was 6-0 on the mound with a 256 ERA. Damon Schmid, Kingsley Pearson Jr. Schmid, who was voted as a first-teamer, hit 402 with 25 RBIs. We now have a story with the headline, Siouxland student Elise Brockhaus is a world-class archer. Lawton, Iowa. Very few people can say they're one of the absolute best in their nation at something, but when it comes to archery, 18-year-old Elise Brockhaus can make the claim with total legitimacy. Not that the recent Lawton Bronson graduate is in the habit of talking herself up a whole lot, not when her skills can speak for her. You'd never see it because she's a super modest, super quiet, doesn't show emotion, but she is a competitor inside. There is a fire burning deep inside. When she gets up there, she wants to win every time, said Lawton Bronson archery coach Jason Carlson. At the end of April in Utah, Brockhaus won the national archery in the school's program's Western National 3D Shooting Tournament, where contestants often take aim at foam animals, and finished 7th in a separate bullseye shooting tournament held at the same time. Even though it was her fourth time at nationals, Brockhaus admits she was a little bit nervous. Gabby Hammond, a 14-year-old student at Siouxland Christian School who competed against Brockhaus at nationals, said Brockhaus' alleged nervousness doesn't show at all. She's very good at keeping her composure. When we had started that day, she wasn't doing real great, but she was just like, I'm going to put that behind me and forget about those. Before a 7th grade PE class with Carlson, Brockhaus had limited experience with the bow and arrow sport. She and her dad shot hunting bows a few times, but that's about it. After she tried archery in class, it wasn't long before Brockhaus was competing, and she realized pretty quickly that she could excel at the sport. I think it was really the first tournament. Usually beginners are shooting in the 200 or 210 range, and the very first tournament I was shooting 250s, and the coach and the upperclassmen were like, you should stay with this, you're a natural. 300 is the highest score a person can attain. Within a year, Brockhaus finished as the runner-up at a state tournament. She's always kind of had it, Carlson said. Once in a while, you find those kids who stand out. Carlson, who has also coached football, wrestling, and golf, and helped out with track, said he started the archery program at Lawton Bronson in 2016 after attending Iowa Department of Natural Resources classes for certifying teachers as basic archery instructors. Once I got my certification, we were allowed to start organizing and assembling a team, and we got quite a few on board right away, Carlson said. According to Carlson, who grew up hunting and shooting a bow in the Les Hills, one motivation for starting the Lawton Bronson program is the way it allows for a different kind of student athlete to find success. Archery is one of those where I could take a kid who would probably never be successful on a basketball court or football field, and they would be very successful and have a great career. It caters to anyone willing to put in the time, Carlson said. Brockhaus' response to whether she's ever had significant interest in competing in other sports supports Carlson's idea. Nope, she said flatly. Since starting the program, Carlson said Lawton Bronson's won 2 state championships as a team and had individual state championships, including Brockhaus this year in March. There she had high scores of 295 in both bullseye and 3D shooting, which is almost as close to perfect as possible. The school has seen 2 national champions as well. broadcast this year, and Brianne Holtz, who still helps out with practices in 2018. Another Lawton Bronson archer, Adam Larson, finished as high as third in nationals with a score of 297 and won 5 state championships. Brockhouse state dominance this year was a breakthrough for her, as she previously finished second on 3 different occasions. Those experiences she had, she used to keep calm, and it really showed her senior year, Carlson said. Even though he has gotten to witness his archers reach the absolute heights of success in the sport, Carlson admitted he's still able to enjoy the simplest things when watching them compete. These kids are shooting bare fingers and sighting off an arrow, which is the rawest form of shooting, he said. When Brockhouse practices her shooting, typically at school, she'll often listen to specific music or just find a random station to have on while she works. It drowns out the rest of the noise for me, she said. To hear Brockhouse tell it, there isn't much of a routine beyond that. She'll just go in and shoot targets for however long she sees fit. On the good days, I'm flinging arrows. On the bad days, I try to find my aim point again, she said. In the run-up to her appearance at a World Open in Louisville in late June, where she finished as high as 5th in her own grade, Brockhouse was practicing at least 30 minutes every day. She's very good at routine, Hammond said. Some kids, when they're first starting, you'll just go at it. They're not really going through the steps. She has a good routine and goes through all the steps. Whether at practice or in a tournament, Brockhouse will have her Genesis compound bow with her. She actually has 2 bows she won from state. There's no sights on it, she said, so you just have to use the tip of your arrow to find your aim point. Now move to a story headlined, Trampolines Tend to Make Insurance Carriers Rather Queasy. Children love trampolines and swimming pools with slides and diving boards. Homeowners insurance carriers typically do not. A number of insurance carriers won't cover homes that have trampolines or pools at all, or they'll offer a policy on the property but with an exclusion endorsement, which relieves the company of exposure to trampoline or pool-related injuries, leaving the homeowners entirely on the hook. Others might be willing to underwrite trampolines and pools, but with strings attached, and higher premiums due to the liability exposure. Tim McClintock, president of McClintock Insurance in Sioux City, said, usually what happens is if it's a brand new account we're writing and you have a trampoline or swimming pool, that will make a difference which carriers we can write. Most will want a privacy fence with lockable gates, and that's to protect from average persons walking by or kids in the neighborhood just coming and jumping in the pool or getting on the trampoline. Insurance companies tend to be particular about these things. Chain link fences do not qualify as privacy fences because it's rather easy for a passerby to see the enticing trampoline that's just beyond the fence. The fence has to obscure whatever is behind it. A wood fence would suffice if it's tall enough and has a locked gate. Privacy fences are also a requirement for trampoline owners under many city codes. Insurers are sometimes more lenient with trampolines situated on acreages out in the country due to the fact that wayward children are less likely to wander over and injure themselves. Trampolines with nets around them can also be viewed more favorably, and pools without diving boards or slides might not be as much an impasse. For insurers, pools, and especially trampolines, represent an attractive nuisance, meaning they have a reputation for attracting children and then injuring them. According to American Family Insurance, most insurance companies do not cover trampolines because they consider them too costly due to liability risks. As an aside, the legal concept of attractive nuisance was first applied in the United States in the 1873 Supreme Court case of Sioux City and Pacific Railroad Company versus Stout, which determined that the Sioux City and Pacific Railroad was liable after a child was injured while playing on railroad property in Nebraska. The term attractive nuisance was not yet in use, but the concept was essentially the same. The term first appeared in another court case a few years later. The skittishness of insurance companies toward trampolines and pools stems entirely from the actual risk that a user will require costly medical care after an injury. Youthful exuberance can raise the stakes beyond an insurer's wildest nightmares. McClintock said, when you see like the TikTok videos, hey, let's try this challenge, and they run off the garage roof onto the trampoline into the pool, and the pool's only 4 feet, there's a lot of chance for injury that way, especially if they overshoot the pool, so that can be a disaster. and health insurance companies increasingly do not want to pay a bill that could be another entity's responsibility if, say, an injury occurred in a way that would make it a home insurer's carrier's liability. McClintock added, that's what we've seen happening more and more, not only with homeowners, property issues, car insurance, and everything else. The health insurance carrier comes back and says, oh, this was an accident. We want this company to pay for it and then reimburse us, he added. Installing a pool or trampoline without telling the insurance company is a poor idea. It can result in a canceled insurance policy even before the term is up due to misrepresentation at the time the policy was written. Insurance agency carriers do not joke around about this type of thing, McClintock said. Some of them use Google Earth and even drones to monitor for the existence of attractive nuisances on properties they insure. He said there are existing accounts where if they add a trampoline or a pool and they don't tell their agent, they'll get one loss, say an injury, and then the company will not renew because they do not like those exposures. So if the renewal is coming up, or they could cancel midterm due to increase in hazard. Homeowners who take on their liability themselves, the aforementioned exclusion endorsement, may end up regretting that decision. You can't get blood out of a turnip, but that probably won't stop the plaintiff from trying after the child suffers a trampoline-induced fracture. McClintock said, usually what ends up happening is, if it's a medical bill high enough and they don't have the coverage, the family that has the property that has the injury occur has to declare bankruptcy. McClintock is no stranger to trampoline and pool horror stories. Diving boards where they've dove in and hurt themselves. We've had one where they broke their neck. That was a major lawsuit. The company paid out for it and then set up to not offer renewal again unless they took the diving board out. If somebody gets hurt, the injury can be substantial. So it can be a broken arm. We've had one where the kid's teeth got knocked out because he got them caught in the trampoline spring, he said. It wasn't always this way. Decades ago, McClintock said, insurance carriers were somewhat less nervous about trampolines and pools. Things were different then. In the past, lawsuits weren't as prevalent as they are now, he said. Medical costs, medical bills are astronomical today compared to what they were then. You broke your arm, they'd set it in a cast, it might be $200, $300 back then. Now you're talking, well, we're going to do x-rays, we might have to get a plastic surgeon involved. How much injury are we talking about? Oh gosh, we've got to go through therapy to get your arm strength back up. Back then it was put it in a cast and you're done. Nobody ever thinks it's going to happen to them. A person likely would not buy a trampoline or pool with a diving board if they saw it as a liability and a heartache waiting to happen. Everybody's your friend, your buddy, and your pal when it comes time to being on the trampoline. But when somebody gets hurt, then they look at you like a bank account, McClintock said. All these bills are going to be taken care of by you, not us, even though it's our kid or us jumping on the stuff or swimming in. Our next headline, how a Spirit Lake, Iowa native became a world-class athlete. A soon-to-be music education sophomore, Max Bauer looks no different than any other 19-year-old at the University of Nebraska. But the Spirit Lake, Iowa native has a special talent that makes him an elite world-class athlete. Currently, Bauer is ranked 52nd in the nation and 190th in the world when it comes to competitive sport stacking, according to the World Sports Stacking Association, the WSSA. When I was younger, I took competition much more seriously, he said. In college, it is more of a conversation starter. So, what the heck is sport stacking? Also known as cup stacking or speed stacking, it involves stacking 9 or 12 cups in a predetermined sequence as quickly as possible. Legend has it that Wayne Gaudinet invented the sport while working at the Boys and Girls Club of Oceanside, California in 1981. After the kids he was working with grew tired of playing traditional sports, Gaudinet took paper cups, asking the kids to stack them. Noticing how much the children enjoyed the activity, he acquired plastic cups for his club. The industrial Gaudinet eventually found a company that manufactured specifically modified cups and began hosting a competitive tournament that caught the attention of the Tonight Show's Johnny Carson. Bob Fox, a Colorado-based physical education teacher, was watching the Carson Show and soon introduced it to his own students. Like Gaudinet's kids, Fox discovered students love stacking cups. Fox subsequently founded the World Sports Stacking Association, an official worldwide governing board promoting the activity. He founded it in 2005. Bauer was 6 years old when he was introduced to stacking at gym teacher Tim O'Hagan's class at Spirit Lake Elementary School. "I loved it," he said. "As soon as I got home from school, I pulled out all of the drinking cups from our kitchen cupboard and started stacking them." Bauer's parents, Lori and George, saw how much he enjoyed the quirky sport and purchased a professional set of stacking cups as a Christmas present. "The more I did it, the faster I became," Bauer said. O'Hagan took note and approached Lori Bauer, also a Spirit Lake Elementary School teacher, to see if her son wanted to compete. "I entered my first tournament when I was 9, Bauer recalled. "Our family made the trip to Ames. During that tournament, I set a state record for my age group. Turns out it was not beginner's luck." Bauer eventually competed in regional tournaments, Amateur Athletic Union, Junior Olympics, as well as WSSA national tournaments. "I really enjoyed going to tournaments because they were like family vacations for us," he said, remembering trips made to places like Denver and Orlando. Bauer even enjoyed the company of other sports stackers. "I've participated in other sports that are super competitive," he said. "In sports stacking, nothing is cutthroat. Everybody is pulling for one another. Perhaps that is because sports stackers know how beneficial the activity can be. Proponents say stacking cups will help a person's dexterity and hand-eye cooperation. More significant are studies that show sports stacking can improve other comprehension skills for students. Bauer said he knows about the studies, but insists his success can be pinpointed to muscle memory. "If you do something often enough, you become better at it," he said modestly. But it must be more than that for Bauer, who is also a gifted athlete and singer. "I think stacking gave me the confidence to try other things," he said. "Sports stacking is a pretty obscure sport to begin with. Knowing that I have a national and world ranking is both surreal and gratifying. Plus, it sets him apart as a college student." "I love sports stacking," Bauer said. "Unfortunately, I don't have time to do it very often." Although he sometimes has the urge to start stacking again. "It's pretty more of a party trick at school," Bauer said with a laugh. "I'm still pretty fast." Our next headline is, summertime hatchet throwing in Sioux City can be a relaxing indoor activity. Axe or hatchet throwing is a unique sport that has been steadily growing since the early 2000s. It is well known as a way to relieve stress by taking one's anger out by throwing a sharp object. In Sioux City, there are two different axe throwing places offering similar experiences. Woody's Axe Throwing at 1227 4th Street and Axe to Grind at 2101 Hamilton Boulevard. Axe to Grind opened in 2019 as an urban axe throwing venue open to people of all ages. Store lead Ashley Monder has been with the business since it opened. She knew someone who was a professional axe thrower and told her about the position. Mondor was a para-educator and needed a break. She wanted a job that was fast-paced and easygoing. Mondor said the place instantly felt like home. "We have people in their 80s and 90s come in to throw, and we have kids that love to come and throw," she said. "People axe throw for a variety of reasons. Whether it's a fun night out with friends or family, a hobby, or a way to relieve stress, Mondor says it's an activity anyone can learn. You walk through these doors, and you know you're safe and you can relax," she said. "We try to make it fun. We make it so you always have somebody to talk to." The store has a variety of regulars and first-timers each week, but Mondor said many of the new people become regulars. She said if someone throws once, a majority of the time they become hooked. Some of the urban axe throwing locations are in bars. Axe to Grind offers about 70 different kinds of canned beer as well as soda and tea. She said people can have the bar feeling while still being in a family-oriented location. Going axe throwing for the first time can be intimidating for people. When someone walks in, she said they are immediately greeted and after signing a few forms, they are walked through a safety briefing. The briefing teaches newcomers the safety rules as well as a few different ways to throw. Mondor said there are three main ways to throw an axe. The first way is with both hands, called the batter's grip. The thrower puts their dominant hand on the bottom of the handle and the non-dominant on top. The second throw is one-handed. Mondor recommends throwers put their pinky on the bottom of the axe. She also said to avoid throwing it like swinging a baseball and swinging across the body. You need to make sure you are staying nice and straight, she said. The third way to throw is called the pistol grip. The thrower puts their dominant hand on the bottom, line up both thumbs and grip together. For beginnings, she recommends throwing with two hands. To begin, she said that they instruct people to stick out their guts as they pull their arms back behind their heads. As they prepare to throw, they should lean forward and stick their butt out, she said. Mondor does not encourage trick throwing because it can be dangerous. Axe to Grind also has mobile axe throwing and will be available to attend events and provide axe throwing opportunities. Mondor said oftentimes that's an easier way for people to become interested in the activity and less intimidating than going to the physical location. There is a target on the wood boards consisting of four rings and a bullseye in the center, while the two dots in the outer ring have a high risk and are known as kill shots. The traditional game of axe throwing involves 10 throws, followed by a tiebreaker. The person with the highest number of points wins. And that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Tuesday, August 9th. I'm your reader, Dagna. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And thank you so much for listening.